Good morning, everyone. It's just 6 seconds past 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, Monday, July 22nd, the 323rd day of war between Britain and Germany. This is NBC's regular early morning period for news, broadcast direct from the capitals of the belligerent nations. This morning, NBC reporters broadcast the news from Berlin and London, and first, a report from the Reich. Go ahead, Berlin.
NBC, this is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin. It seems, to judge by the reports in the German press this morning, remembering that a number of the leading Berlin papers do not appear on Monday mornings at all, that the reaction in England to Adolf Hitler's Reichstag speech of Friday last continues negative. But, so it is pointed out, the voice of the British press and radio is not the voice of the British people. The public in England, says the Völkischer Beobachter, has not been asked, and it has no possibility of making its voice heard. To quote the organ of the British Labour Party, the Daily Herald, the German paper says, as evidence of the solidarity of the British people in this critical time is simply grotesque. For the Labour leaders, Attlee, Morrison and Bevin, have long since been the paid agents of the clique that is in the saddle in England. So says the Völkischer Beobachter. The Frankfurter Zeitung, on the other hand, says that the voice of Winston Churchill in answer to Herr Hitler's appeal has not been heard. The press has spoken, and it may be considered as speaking for the government, but an official commentary has not been uttered unless it be the words of Mr. Churchill spoken before the Führer's speech. England has nothing to look forward to, save an attack that threatens to be so terrible as to make the stoutest heart quail. The attack will not be easy, and it will call for sacrifices for the attacker. But nothing that Adolf Hitler has undertaken has ever failed, and no war was ever so popular in Germany as the present one against England. Hitler has said that in his opinion there is no compelling reason for continuing the war. The way has been cleared for the new order in Europe, and Germany will get her colonies back. Italy's demands, too, will surely be fulfilled. Meanwhile, England will be destroyed, and with it the British Empire, a development which Hitler does not desire, but the responsibility is no longer his. All he wants is to break up English influence on the continent. The paper then goes on to launch a bitter attack on President Roosevelt for his share of the responsibility for England's plight. Why? Because he has for years systematically agitated against National Socialist Germany. He said so himself in his speech of acceptance, because in this hour, when the dictators must be beaten, only he can do it. He has intervened in Europe continuously, not indeed with the army or the navy, but by speeches and intrigue, and by a tremendous propaganda which is at the service of England. Roosevelt, whom his own countrymen accuse of dictatorship, in the service of an exploitation of the country, is the man who claims to have saved his people from European dictators. But what he did, so says the Frankfurter Zeitung, has been to awaken illusions regarding American intervention. It was the hope of American assistance that kept France alive until she went under in defeat, and that today buoys up England in still-defying German might. Roosevelt may win an election, but England will plunge to destruction. That is the opinion of the Frankfurter Zeitung. And it helps to show the premises on which German opinion in regard to the coming struggle is based. The fight must come because the British are not yet convinced that their cause is hopeless. They have misunderstood National Socialist Germany from the beginning, and now they are about to pay the penalty for their error. Meanwhile, three more small nations with whom the United States was on friendly terms have disappeared from the map. The parliaments of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, yesterday all three of them voted to become socialist republics, Soviet republics, and to join up with Soviet Russia. For 200 years, the territory which they occupied formed part of Tsarist Russia. Before that, it had been Swedish and Polish. It was first civilized and Christianized by the German Order of Teutonic Knights back in the Middle Ages, and the German Hanseatic League developed it commercially. Down to the Russian Revolution, German landlords owned 75% of the land, which supported a peasant population of a different blood. In the last World War, Germany occupied the country, and on her retirement, independent republics were set up. And now the Bolshevists have swallowed them up completely. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
That was the news in Germany at this time. Next, the late news in Great Britain. Go ahead, London.
This is London, at about 5 minutes past 1 p.m. John McVane speaking. Two and possibly three Nazi planes are reported to have been shot down by anti-aircraft guns in a raid on southwestern England today. The Air Ministry today stated that the Germans lost 21 planes in raids on Britain Saturday and three yesterday. The Ministry this morning confirmed the shooting down of one German fighter. The Nazi plane attacked a British training machine painted bright yellow to show it was unarmed. British chasers came to the rescue and shot the German plane down, the Air Ministry says. High explosive and fire bombs were dropped on a town in southeast Scotland this morning. There are a few casualties, but little material damage, it is reported. Districts in the English Midlands and northeast coast were bombed during the night. Two German airmen, taken prisoner yesterday when their plane made a forced landing in England, said they had been told by superior officers that they would be shot on sight if they landed in Britain. The British destroyer Brazen, the vessel that located the sunken submarine Thetis last year, sank while she was being towed to port after an air attack, the Admiralty announced today. The communique says there was no loss of life. Official Air Ministry figures claim that Germany has lost 5,000 planes since the war began. British flyers are said to have shot down 2,531 machines. The Nazis are estimated to have lost more than 10,000 pilots, air gunners, observers, and navigators. It will take the Nazis a full year to train replacements, the British think. In all theaters of war, the British have lost 600 planes with a personnel of 1,800, the Air Ministry says. The British taxpayer is getting ready for another shock in the place he feels the war most, his pocketbook. The third war budget, which will be introduced in the House of Commons tomorrow, is expected to increase the income tax by one and perhaps 2 shillings in the pound. Financial circles predict a rise in the tobacco taxes, which will bring the price of popular cigarettes to nearly 2 cents apiece. A few days ago, when the government hinted at compulsory censorship in the British press, the press made bitter protests that the government was attempting to infringe on the rights of free speech and free press. Perhaps influenced by the protests, Mr. Duff Cooper, Minister of Information, yesterday promised that the press will be allowed to keep the present system of voluntary censorship. Under this system, newspaper editors submit for censorship only those articles which they think might give military information to the enemy. It is whenever government bureaucracy seems to threaten the democratic values such as free press and free speech that you see British freedom of opinion at its best. Press and public hit out at government members and policies in a way that is impossible in most of the rest of Europe. In France, before the German occupation, such criticism of the government was largely impossible. The censors stopped it by censoring all criticisms of the government or of censorship itself. I saw the result of this at the end when the public, confused and badly informed, didn't know what was happening until it was too late to do anything about it. Hot arguments are being carried out in the letters to the editor columns of the British press on whether Hitler or the Kaiser is the beast in Revelation 666. One columnist today points out that Martin Luther, Napoleon, and the Roman Emperor Domitian have all been definitely proved to be the beast to which the Bible refers. Pay your money and take your choice, the columnist says. When a German firebomb fell in his garden, a member of parliament grabbed an old-fashioned tin bathtub, put it over the bomb upside down, and smothered the fire. Dispatches arriving in London tell of growing disappointment in Germany at the failure of Hitler's peace offensive. Political circles in London believe that Lord Halifax, in his broadcast tonight, will emphasize that Hitler's speech contained no offer or proposal which calls for reply from the British government. Nazi broadcasters are reported to have told listeners that the warmonger pack in London withheld the contents of the Führer's speech from the public. Well, I only know that Hitler's speech appeared prominently in all British papers, and that many of them gave the text. News agency machines were churning out the full speech while Hitler was talking. More than 700 railroad bridges in France were destroyed in the war, according to an announcement broadcast last night by Monsieur Pietri, Minister of Communications in the Pétain government. He said that roads, canals, telegraph, and telephone services normally employing 800,000 workers had been disrupted. The Daily Express today advises the government to overcome Southern Ireland's distrust of Britain by offering her the services of an international brigade made up of Poles, Frenchmen, German, and Austrian refugees. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
This is the NBC Newsroom in New York. You've heard the late news in Germany and Britain broadcast by NBC war reporters direct from Berlin and London. Now, for the news in our own national capital, reported from the NBC newsroom in Washington.
This is Claude Mahoney in Washington. The news here is the weather. For the entire weekend, Washington has sweltered under temperatures of 96 and 97 with little relief in sight. This, with the high humidity that accompanies Washington heat, has caused many officials to leave the capital for the mountains and seashore or bayside. But on porches around beaches and swimming pools where there were the continual discussions over the weekend, the discussions that are peculiar to a great national capital, you heard about the Havana Conference and you heard about national politics. There isn't as much optimism, I believe, as there was some time ago about the Havana Conference, where Secretary Hull hopes to unite American nations in an economic scheme that will prevent dominance of goods by dictator nations. Many people are finding for the first time how strongly entrenched Germany in particular is in South America, with parts of her economic system and parts of her general system of government being copied. But that doesn't have the interest and isn't talked of so much as politics here. Observers were given another insight to the coming campaign over the weekend when Solicitor General Francis Biddle made a speech defending the New Deal and defending the third term for President Roosevelt. That indicated that while the president might adhere to his announced plan of making few purely political speeches himself, he may send some of his top associates directly into battle for him. But the thing that presages a real fight in the campaign is the intensely partisan feeling among so many people here, a feeling that we didn't sense so much and that hadn't reached its height until after the Chicago convention of the Democratic Party had closed. You know there's going to be a fight because people don't give you a list of reasons why their candidates will win. They give you reasons why the opposition will be beaten. Now, any good Wilkie campaigner will tell you at the drop of a hat, or even before the hat hits the floor, that the people absolutely won't stand for a third term for President Roosevelt, that the people will call that an approach to dictatorship, the kind of government Mr. Roosevelt has been condemning. Furthermore, they say, the people are in revolt over the way the Chicago Convention was run, over the vice presidential candidate, a former Republican. And they ask, who is this Roosevelt anyway? Who thinks he is indispensable? Lots of them say that they don't think the president has done anything much to keep us out of war since he got the neutrality bill through Congress. And the Wilkie people laugh at the high and noble campaign idea. High and noble, they say, and based around some of the most infamous political machines in the nation's history. The New Deal, they say, is driving the nation into bankruptcy, and it has destroyed private initiative. And what about insulting Jim Farley, the best friend the party ever had? Another point, they don't like Mr. Roosevelt anyway. And then the real Roosevelt fans say, just wait until the New Deal digs up all the dope on that guy Wilkie. You can't elect a big utilities man. He used to be a Democrat, and he switched over to be Republican so he could run for president. He got a lot of advertising, beat out the real Republicans, made the party workers mad. And then they say, who ever heard of Wilkie anyway, until he began to fight the New Deal? And they say he's a phony farmer, and that he probably is just a slicker in farmer's clothing and pays some barber to keep his hair so it musses up easily. And as I give you that, don't you think it sounds like a nice fighting campaign? And that's the news in Washington at this time.
During the past quarter hour, you've heard NBC's regular early morning news roundup. This morning, you heard from NBC staff reporters in Berlin, London, and Washington. Tomorrow morning at this time, NBC reports from London, Rome, and Washington. This is the National Broadcasting Company.